The sheer number of genetic tests has exploded in the past decade or so, changing people's lives and the field of medicine. We're going to dig into these changes, starting with a look at pregnancy, one human experience that has forever been altered by genetic testing.
It's made it more complicated, it's made it more technologic, but I think that it's settled into a place where it is empowering the pregnant woman by giving her information and knowledge.
Veteran OBGYN Stuart Wiener of Jefferson University Hospital in Philadelphia with a knowledge is power take on prenatal testing. But with the option of tests also comes a lot of worrying, uncertainty, and tough choices. The majority of women receive some form of screening for problems or genetic testing during the first trimester, often soon after a first ultrasound confirms the pregnancy.
I went to my first prenatal appointment with the OBGYN this morning. Everything was fine. They actually saw a heartbeat at 6 weeks, which they didn't know if they were going to be able to, so that was really exciting.
You can hear the apprehension in this voice. The woman, she didn't want me to use her name because nobody other than her husband knows she's pregnant yet. And that apprehension is about everything that could go wrong, that she could yet find out.
My inclination now, as far as genetic testing, is I kind of want to do whatever is available to me. I am very much a need-to-knower, so the idea of having any less uncertainty is really preferable to me.
What expectant parents, especially those over the age of 35, seem most concerned about and want to test for is Down syndrome, the most common genetic disorder in the United States. About 1 in 700 babies are born with it.
Prior to prenatal testing, Down syndrome was a surprise postnatal diagnosis.
Brian Scottko co-directs the Down syndrome program at Massachusetts General Hospital in Boston.
But Down syndrome now is really shifting from a postnatal diagnosis to a prenatal one.
French physician Jérôme Lejeune identified Down syndrome as a chromosomal condition in 1959, where chromosome 21 is triplicated rather than duplicated. Invasive tests such as amniocentesis or chorionic villus sampling have been available since the 70s, but 5 years ago, prenatal testing took a massive leap forward.
Pregnancy, as we know it, changed in October of 2011 here in the United States, and that's when the cell-free DNA non-invasive prenatal screening test was introduced.
This is a simple blood test for the expectant woman. It analyzes tiny fragments of DNA from the placenta in the mother's blood, and it can detect if there is an extra copy of chromosome 21. These tests can be done as early as 9 weeks into the pregnancy, and they are highly accurate. If a woman gets a positive result, she is encouraged to still complete a more invasive test before making any further decisions.
Each year in the United States, only about 2% of expectant women pursue amniocentesis or chorionic villus sampling, which are the only two tests that can confirm Down syndrome diagnostically.
And if that test comes back positive, Scottko says many couples feel like they've been punched in the stomach. The vision of the future is suddenly changed. A serious illness is now in the picture, a child who will likely need care and support their entire lives. It often becomes an overwhelming question of emotional and financial resources. And in this pressure cooker of uncertainties,
research shows about 74% will choose to terminate their pregnancy.
In real numbers, says Scottko, that translates to about 3,100 Down syndrome-related abortions each year. About 5,300 babies with Down syndrome are born annually. Many women decide to forego further testing, and many still find out after birth. Scottko just completed a massive study of these numbers, and he expects that the effect of prenatal screening on this population will only increase as tests become available earlier on in the pregnancy. Despite the many potentially scary, high-tech aspects of pregnancy, for many expecting parents, this is still a time of true joy.
We were so excited, you know, and I think we even told our parents on Mother's Day.
We had them here,
and we were just...
We made a big champagne punch,
yeah,
and made the announcement.
It was wonderful.
Yes.
Candace and Tim Oglein live in Marlton, New Jersey. She's a nurse. He's a graphic designer. They had suffered a miscarriage early in their marriage, and they were thrilled to be expecting again. They made plans and talked names.
If it was a girl, she would name her.
Victoria.
And if he's a boy, I would name him. And I wanted to have a name that would look good on a book jacket for when he was going to be a famous writer someday.
Since Candace was 40 at the time, her physician suggested some genetic testing. The test showed an elevated risk for Down syndrome, and the genetic counselor said she could consider an amniocentesis. Candace declined.
If we did come with those results and it was positive, we weren't going to do anything anyway.
When their son Philip was born, they were told he had features of Down syndrome and needed to undergo genetic testing. Candace didn't believe it at first. In the hours and days after his birth, she told herself Philip was squinting or that his face was swollen from birth. Then she looked at Philip's newborn pictures taken at the hospital.
And when I saw the picture, I can see the Down syndrome features in the picture. And I just start crying. And I'm crying, and I'm all upset.
3 days later, her doctor called her up with the definite diagnosis. Philip had Down syndrome.
I just couldn't even talk. And he's like, Candy, are you okay? And I said, no, I'm not okay. No, I'm not okay.
The Oglines went to see their priest to talk about the grief they felt over the loss of the child they thought they would have. The priest asked them to rethink what happiness meant to them. Could they be happy if Philip was happy? Both say it was a simple question that helped them find a new outlook. Philip is 5 years old now.
He's an amazing little boy. We just can't imagine him being different. We're not having him around. I mean, he's just a wonderful little kid, and we just love him.
Like pretty much every kid his age, he loves his parents' smartphones, and he knows how to take pictures.
Mommy.
Yes.
Cheese.
Tim.
Cheese.
Cheese.
Did he say Tim?
Yes. He calls, instead of calling him daddy, he calls him Tim. Speech-wise, he is delayed. Even though Philip is 5 years old, developmentally he's 2.5. I think he is wonderful. And he's ours.
Brian Scottgo has published research on how Down syndrome affects the people who live with the disorder.
And 99% of people with Down syndrome said they're happy with their lives, and 99% said they like how they look. You know, when you interview the typical Americans, only about 45% of us are happy with our lives.
Scottgo says a lot of the health problems that tend to accompany Down syndrome, in addition to intellectual disability, such as heart or thyroid disease, can be fixed today. And the 200,000 people with a disorder in the U.S. today are living longer lives.
And since people with Down syndrome are living longer, we don't know what impact that will have on the competing number of increasing terminations.
Several states, including Pennsylvania, Delaware, and Ohio, have enacted Down syndrome information legislation where parents must get additional information on what it means to live with the condition when they receive a prenatal diagnosis. Scottgo feels that Down syndrome is the canary in the coal mine, a peek at how humans will respond and cope as more and more genetic conditions can be tested for. Jefferson OBGYN Stuart Weiner shares this concern.
It's quite clear that in the not too distant future, we'll have the ability to do a complete genome sequence on the unborn fetus with just a blood test from the mother. That's going to has already created a lot of fascinating ethical discussions because you're finding out more than we know what to do with.